Hi, welcome to a Standlib podcast. My name is Kim Inlings. I'm the chief economist within Standlib. Today, I'm joined by Amit Palmer, who is an investment specialist within JP Morgan Asset Management. And we're going to be talking about equities more broadly, but specifically the Standlib Global Select Fund. Now, we launched that fund in South Africa back in the third quarter last year, and we're very proud of that. We're very proud of our partnership with JP Morgan. JP Morgan essentially is our primary strategic offshore partner. And what we want to do is delve into the Global Select Fund a little bit more. We need to understand the underlying dynamic. How do stocks make their way into the portfolio? What is the philosophy around that portfolio? What are some of the opportunities that asset managers see and what JP Morgan is including? So quite a lot to unpack. We'll try and get through it in around about 7 or 8 minutes. So Amit, thanks for joining us. Thanks for availing your time. We really appreciate that. Can we start with a broader discussion about Global Select? In other words, what is the overall approach? What is what I guess we would call the philosophy of the fund? What is the idea behind the fund overall?
Absolutely. And again, thank you very much, Kevin. It's always great to speak to you. It's our pleasure to bring Global Select to South Africa and to the marketplace there for investors. It's been a flagship core global strategy for us, which has seen tremendous interest worldwide from investors around the world. And what the strategy really stands for is it utilizes our bottom-up fundamental research process that was developed over a multi-decade period. You know, that's leveraging analysts around the world, dedicated and focused on their sectors, and really deriving their best ideas in a very risk-controlled, style-agnostic, and best ideas mandate to achieve that overall portfolio where you are getting exposure to companies and, importantly, those structural themes from around the world, which are really going to be shaping the global economy of tomorrow. So a long-term portfolio, a real all-weather portfolio as well. So for core equity, global equity exposure for clients.
Amit, it's been described as a high conviction portfolio. And by that, I would assume it means that there is something of an internal fight as to which stocks make their way into the portfolio. It's not a question of, well, let's fill up this portfolio with available shares. It's about trying to select the ones that you've really got the most amount of research, the most amount of insights. You got a high conviction around the outlook for that. That level of conviction, what determines that? What says to you as a team that this stock in particular is going to make its way into the portfolio?
There's two really key considerations there. One element of that discussion comes down to the quality of the franchise that you're investing into. And the other piece of that really is the valuation opportunity there. And with our research platform, and I alluded to it before, more than 80 analysts located around the world, they're separated into their respective sectors. So there's a Japanese utilities analyst, there's a US utilities analyst, there's a US autos analyst, there's a European autos analyst. And they're focused and dedicated to their sectors on a day-to-day basis. And they will always be coming back to portfolio managers and to investors with their top ideas. So all of those people I mentioned will have something at the top of their list, which they're recommending. Now, what shapes that list for them, those high conviction ideas, they're going to be looking for a combination of that business quality. And really the area we look for when I say business quality is that persistence of earnings, the sustainability of earnings, the quality of earnings. And does this company, and this is such an important question, does this company have pricing power in their respective sector, in their region, in their marketplace? And then you couple that with the valuation opportunity there. We don't want to be overpaying, even if it's a great company. What we want to be doing is thinking about, do we believe this company is going to achieve an attractive return over the course of the next 3, 4, 5, 6 years? And is this an attractive entry point to start building up a position within it? Now, from a portfolio construction perspective, there's going to be a much smaller cohort. We have 2,500 companies under coverage. there's a much smaller cohort of great quality franchises which are attractively valued. And then it's up to our portfolio managers to then say, well, how do we fit this portfolio together? And I mentioned this is a very risk-controlled portfolio. We don't take massive sector deviations. That's not our bread and butter. Our secret sauce is not taking sector views. If you see the media sector being overweight, the semiconductor sector being overweight versus consumer staples and utilities, that's driven from a bottom-up perspective. So it's bottom-up stock insights which are really driving the portfolio. And that comes back down to, is this a good quality company in charge of its own destiny? And is this an attractive time to be buying it? It sounds very simple, but in practice, it's a very powerful machine.
And Amit, if you find yourself overexposed to a particular sector, for good reason, right? It's not as if you've gone and pursued that, but you found some good quality companies at a good price. You've put them in the portfolio, but now you have quite a high exposure to a particular sector. Do you scale it back? Or do you say, no, we've got that conviction, we're going to let this play out, and over time, it will be managed?
So it's a very interesting point. And on first glance, you might expect every company is held for a very long period of time, very little trading activity. But the lead manager on the strategy, Helgi Scibelli, and the investment team, which really sits behind him, they're very keen on trimming down those positions which have outperformed over a period of time and reallocating those proceeds and those profits to other areas of the market which are more attractively valued. The dynamic right now, just to bring this to life for you, clearly we've seen technology names outperform over a period. Meta, for example, Uber's done very well last year and continues to do well this year. Many of those most technology exposed names have done very, very well. We've been actively taking profits on those and cycling it back into more attractively valued defensive parts of the market. And we view defensives as being more attractive right now. That's where our analyst valuation signals are pointing us. And through our own technology platform, we can really aggregate and cut this data in different ways. So we can look at, okay, what's the relative valuation of those more defensive cohorts of companies compared to the growthier cohorts? What does cyclicals look like at the moment? What does value look like on a sector by sector or regional basis? And that really directs our decision making, is that valuation signal there.
Amit, would you say that the decision to sell a stock is equally as important as the decision to buy a stock?
100%. What I would say, though, is it's never, unless there's a breakdown in thesis, where you wouldn't necessarily look to exit something almost immediately unless there's those concerns. So put that aside for 1 second. What tends to be the case much more is when we put our conviction behind a name, when we view it as attractively valued, we will slowly build up that position whilst taking profits on those positions which are drifting down our valuation signals. And so that dynamic there is really what governs that turnover. So it's never an automatic sell decision if that thesis is playing out. It's more likely that we've bought it when we thought this is attractively valued. We've got an opportunity here. And as it drifts up those valuation rankings and becomes more expensive, we're actively then looking to trim those proceeds and reallocate. That dynamic of reallocation and trimming and adding is going on every single day. And that's really what the investment team looks to do.
So, Amit, to finish off, there are two questions that kind of relate to one another. The first is, how does the fund deal with the business cycle? So economies go through cycles, most of that determined, I guess, by interest rate changes. Yet your portfolio, you're saying you're building up a position over a period of time. You would ideally want to hold the stock for a reasonable length of time. You don't want to be trading the stock all the time. And in the background, there's a business cycle unfolding. How does the business cycle impact your investment decision?
I think what we look to do is actually insulate ourselves to a degree from the vagaries of the business cycle. And the natural, not bias, but tilt in the portfolio is to focus on quality. And I come back to what I mentioned earlier about business quality. We look to those companies where they crucially have pricing power in their respective marketplaces and industries. And if you have pricing power, whether the business cycle is in your favor or whether it's going against you, you have control over your own destiny. And that's really what we're looking for from companies. So where possible, we want to insulate ourselves as much as we can from those factors outside our control. The way we think about it is we want to limit the number of outcomes for these companies. And that focus on quality and the sustainability of earnings is absolutely key there. The other element is really with the backgrounds of the investment team. So I mentioned Helgi before. He's previously headed up and designed this investment process in his seat as head of developed market equity research before he became and dedicated himself to full-time portfolio management. His co-portfolio manager, Christian Pescher, also previously held a head of research position. They've held positions fundamentally where they're working with these analysts on a day-to-day basis around the world. And these analysts have such deep knowledge, on average more than 19 years, dedicated and focused on their sectors. So they have a better understanding of that business cycle than almost anyone. And they'll always have an idea front of mind to say, this is what I recommend you purchase when the business cycle is going against you. This is what I recommend when it's really going in your favor. These are the highest quality franchises available in my sector, in my region. So having that opportunity set there and also having sat in a research seat themselves means they're very much geared into utilizing that expertise of subject matter experts around the world.
Okay, so then the last point, and following on from that, what happens if there's some geopolitical event? Russia invades the Ukraine, there's a problem in the Middle East. How is that absorbed within the portfolio? Is it initially just monitor the situation, or is there any sort of active process to now adjust the portfolio to deal with those sort of global disturbances?
It's really interesting in terms of macroeconomic events that have happened, because whilst you do see some of the portfolio shift, it tends to be much more where parts of the market have dislocated as a result. And I'll give you a couple of examples there just to illustrate how we've thought about it, because it will prompt those debates and those discussions amongst the team. But our bread and butter is a stock selectors. And so our focus immediately, regardless of what that geopolitical backdrop looks like, is, well, where's the stock level opportunity for us? So rewinding back to 2022, we had tremendous performance, but that wasn't from being overweight the energy sector, for example. But our valuation signal, where our analysts pointed us, was to being overweight defensives as we went into the year. So we were well set up in terms of that defensive exposure when geopolitical uncertainty, just through the valuation signal and the quality of those companies, really started to escalate. And then as we moved through the year, we were taking profits on those defensive companies, and we looked to initiate those positions in Meta. We looked to initiate those positions in some of those now magnificent seven-star names, because the valuation opportunity really governed that. Now, we don't want to be making a very binary geopolitical call and shaping the portfolio around that. What we want to do, even if we get it wrong for a quarter, is focus on the stock level opportunities which may result from that backdrop, and really stick to our bread and butter, which is focus on stock level risk, focus on valuations, focus on business quality. Those are all variables we have control over and we believe we have some forecasting power over, rather than the geopolitical backdrop.
Brilliant. Thanks, Emmett. Thanks for your insights. Makes a lot of sense to me. I'm certainly excited about the fund, and I've looked at the performance. It's exceptional. So we hope that continues on. But thanks a lot for your time. Thanks for joining us.